But first, the year that made me. It is 70 years this year since the birth of the modern state of Israel. For Jews, it was the culmination of a fight for a place of safety in a homeland promised, as they saw it, by God to Moses. For Palestinians, 1948 is remembered as Al-Nakba, the catastrophe. By the end of that year, 80% of the Palestinian Arabs living in what would become the new Jewish state had been killed, forced out, or fled. Many of them walked with whatever they could carry into Jordan or into Lebanon. 12 years after that event, Olfat Mahmoud was born in a one-bedroom, unplumbed shanty in a refugee camp at the edge of Beirut. She was the third of her parents' 9 children. Her story is the story of Palestinian exile, of statelessness, of war, survival, but constant insecurity. And it is contained vividly in a new book written with the help of some Australian friends. The book is called Tears for Tashiha. For the year that made me, Olfat Mahmoud, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you.
What is your first memory of that camp at the edge of Beirut?
It's divided, actually, internal and external. My internal life within my family, I mean, was really perfect. We are a big family, but I had all this feeling of being safe and protected and loved by my family. But when you go outside, the family was always terrified and was always unsafe for me, as even as a child. The setup of the camps were really very bad and still. Like, for example, we have very poor infrastructure. Many people lived in tents. I didn't. I was born in, like, how you described it, this house. But no space for me as a child to play. I saw my mother collecting water by hand because the camps were set up as temporary place for Palestinians, which means no water, no electricity, no phone lines, nothing, no fun. Until now, we still buy the city water to drink and cook. Also, the police always. I remember as a child walking around the camp, and they have put lots of rules, which is not really, like, I can't see the logic behind it. For example, women were not allowed to do any housework during the daytime because they don't want the water to come out, as we have open sewage system. So our parents used to do all the housework during the night. And during the day, we will collect water in big containers so at night we can throw them out. The house in summer was very, very hot. And in winter, my God, very cold. No sunlight. It's overcrowded. And the situation is still the same until now. Even now, the problem is increasing and actually getting worse, especially after the Syrian conflict, because many Palestinian Syrians, they left Syria and they came and joined their families in the camps, and they share with them the little resource they have. Mm. So as a child, I never slept full night sleep, because especially in winter, because the roof was metal roof and has holes, so the water will come through, and our parents had to wake us up at night to move us. And it's like, so from outside was terrible experience, but within the family, they tried to protect us as much as they can.
You had almost nothing in terms of material possessions, but among your family possessions was a key. And that was one physical link back to your parents' former life. Tell me about that key.
Yeah, actually, the key was the first exposure to me to my village, Tarshiha, directly. So I was cleaning, I was very little, maybe 6-7 years old, cleaning with my grandmother, her kitchen, and I found this rusty key. I was laughing, and I said, why you keep this rusty key? Throw it away. And I heard my grandfather, the first time in my life, screamed at me, and he said, no, this is the key for my house. And that night, he called us all, and he said, sorry, I was really angry this morning, but this is the key for my house. I locked my house when we were forced to leave at gunpoint, and thought that it will be only for a couple of weeks and then we will return back. And then I started to question and ask more and more. And even the way they described Tarshiha for me, as if I have been there. I've never been there and I'm not allowed even to visit there. But I have the image of Tarshiha in my mind.
This is one of the things that comes through very strongly in your book, because you have witnessed the most terrible things, including being right at the center of the Sabra and Shatila massacre in a refugee camp in the early 1980s. Thousands of people slaughtered, and you feared, you were very close to being caught up and killed in the middle of that. Vivid as your accounting is of that terrible event, it is no more vivid than the stories you have of this town that you've never, ever seen in your life. That says something about the strength of the family stories of Tarshiha.
Exactly. When I saw many videos coming from Tarshiha, I felt I know Tarshiha. It's the same as my grandparents described it and as my parents did. So they were really accurate. And blindly, I know all the streets of Tarshiha.
But you can't return there?
No. I have the right to return under UN Resolution 194, but it's not activated.
So although the UN has said that there is a right of return for those Palestinians who were forced out of their land, out of their ancestral lands in 1948, the reality is a different story.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, you've achieved astonishing things in your life. You've got a PhD, you have raised your own family, you have spoken at the United Nations, you've met secretary generals, you've traveled around the world. How have you done that? What has been the driving impetus that has allowed you to come out of that camp, to have the life you have now?
Actually, the year I joined nursing in 1979, I was planning to study medicine, but the war in Lebanon and my father couldn't afford sending me to university. So I want to please my dad. He was very upset, like he couldn't keep his promise. So I joined the School of Nursing, and then I loved nursing. And through my work, I had to go first to London to do a course in clinical instructing. Then I had chance to meet my Australian, dear Australian sister, Dr. Helen McHugh, who resigned from WHO to come and work with Palestinians after Sabra and Shatila massacre. So I had a chance to come to Australia in 1984-85 to do a course in community nursing. And through that course, I loved working within the community. So when I returned back home, not home, to the refugee camp, another war started and I had really terrible experience. Then I decided to quit nursing to do some work within the community. That encouraged me to return back to university and do more studies. I couldn't go like when I finished my high school. I went after about 12, 13 years to university because I started to do some work and save some money. And then I did my PhD in positive psychology. And I wanted to do it in positive psychology because everything around me is negative, but from inside, I am positive. And I traveled through my work to raise awareness about my people and to be the voice of my people out. And also, the love of the family gave me this confidence and this trust, and always my parents helped me and encouraged me to do all this work. Like my parents used to keep my children when I travel, and they will say, don't worry about them, they will be fine, they will be safe, and encourage me to do this work.
You're listening to Olfat Mahmood, Palestinian refugee and activist and advocate. Olfat, do you think the Palestinian people will ever get to return to the lands they lost in 1948?
Yeah, we believe in that because we believe this is our right. And we believe it will happen one day. It will happen and we will not give up. And I'll tell you, we used to live together in Palestine. Christian, Muslim, Jewish, we used to live together. Why not now? Now the whole world is really crazy about democracy and human rights, civil rights. Why, when it comes to the Palestinians, we stopped?
Do you think that it can be returned, that you can return to those Palestinian lands because of force of arms?
Look, I believe in peaceful ways. always, because what war brings death and, you know, horrible experience. So hopefully we can come to a peaceful solution. But peace alone is not enough. We have to have peace and justice. Palestinians should be given the right to return, and hopefully peacefully.
I'm reminded so much in reading your book of the Jewish history of exile, because exile is written so much into the Jewish story. In fact, the famous Psalm 137, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and wept as we remembered Zion. It's deeply written into the Jewish history as a sense of exile from their homeland. And of course, they got there, but it took hundreds of years.
Thousands.
Do you think it will take hundreds or thousands of years for your descendants to go back to Tashiha?
Already we are 70 years, so hopefully we will return back.
Well, you nominated for us as your year, the year that made you 1979. That was when you started nursing.
Yes.
And you were politically active in that period as well, as your book vividly recounts. Mm. Your song is from the Lebanese superstar, Fairuz. It's called We Will Return One Day. Tell us about the song.
I love this song. We will return one day to our Hayyina. Hayyina means to our village, yani, to our where we used to live. I love this song because it makes me feel strong, and it's like insisting on returning back.
All right. Well, here is Fairuz, Olfat Mahmood. Welcome back to Australia. So lovely
Thank
to
you.
Talk to you today.
Thank you. ونغرق في دافئة الهدى سنرجع مهما يمر الزمان وتنهى المسافات ما بيننا
The beautiful voice of the Lebanese superstar Fairuz with the song in English translation, We Will Return Someday, a song chosen by my guest for the year that made me, Olfat Mahmood.